Access number 27268, Mr. Dennis Reed, Rail 4. Now, in the was there a canteen in the barracks for you? You know, for the evening. You know, a sort of canteen, tea and buns, or a wet canteen. At Chatham, or is it not something you remember?
No, I've got no true recollection of that.
Okay, well, let's ask you another. What about kit inspections, room inspections? You know,
do oh, they happened all the time.
And what was a typical kit inspection like? How much work would you have to do, bullying your boots, getting everything?
It would depend who took it. If you had what we would call a pusser's built bloke, then it was murder. I mean, some of the things were stupid. I mean, when you had your blankets and your, believe it or not, a sheet. I mean, you had to show so many folds in the sheet, so many folds in the blanket, and all the kit had to be laid out on the deck, your boots, your shoes, everything like that. That was kit inspection. Okay, it taught a person that, to be clean. They would always find something wrong.
How polished did you need your boots? You know what the army can be like, so you can see your face in them. I mean, was it like that, or was...
It was worse than that. I mean, you had to bone your boots.
What do you mean, bone them?
The toe caps was absolutely mirror shiny.
Now, how did you do that?
Spit and polish. I mean that, spit and polish. I don't mean that you went, you know, and really spat on it, but you're cleaning your boot. You got your, and you used your finger, you didn't use a cloth, and you just used a on the boot and then rub it in. That's all. And sit there talking to your mate, you know, you just do that, like that, the front toe cap, and then the back, like that. And then underneath, there.
The sole.
The instep.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Yeah,
I see
that bit there. Sorry. You used to have to do that. But then, you see, pride came into it. You see, all right, my boots are cleaner than yours. Or you didn't say that, but you look and think, bloody hell, you know. So, you had to do a little bit better. But then the pride came into it, that my boots are nice and clean. And then all your bright work, you cleaned at the back of it. I mean, oh, you can't see it now. I've got the bit of the belt there for the standard, and it's got the Brunswick Star on it. That's that big badge you wear on your pith helmet. And... it's no good you putting a button stick behind it and cleaning that. You had to take it out and clean the back as well, you see. See, actually, all this, you heard the old saying that you used to polish the coal in the coal bunkers. There was a method into it. And the method was, one is discipline. And the main was... you done whatever you were told without asking. I mean, if a sergeant said to you, jump over that wall, Reed, I mean, you didn't say, oh, why, sergeant? You jumped over the wall. And that more or less trained you that whatever order you had, you obeyed. Right or wrong, you see. If it's wrong, you're dead. But nevertheless, that was basically...
And what about cleaning your rooms? Was that the same, you know, polishing the floor, bumping the floors perhaps?
Well, cleaning the room was a matter of personal pride once again. I mean, you did have, I mean, they were known as cook of the mess. I mean, the mess is where you lived aboard a ship. And I mean, once you was inside the barracks, you was then, I mean, you were saying, when you go out of an evening, you don't go, oh, I'm going down to the town, I'm going ashore.
Even though you were ashore all the time, you were
even in barracks. Though, once you was aboard there, once you was in barracks, you was aboard. You used the naval expression. I still use it now. like I very seldom call a flaw a flaw. Habit, dick. I come out with various naval expressions. Well, that is it. You know, once again, the pride, once again, used to keep the room clean. The room used to be examined, inspected, and if there was found to be dirt, dust, or any rubbish around, well, then you paid for it because you had to forego your time ashore and clean it up. So that was that.
Now, anything about your training, anything else we've missed out of your training? I mean, it was about six, seven months.
Give or take about that length of time.
We'll look those for things that we'll put the dates in your cataloguing, so don't need to worry about that too much.
But then, you see, when you finished the training, you used to pass out.
Now, tell me about that. What, was there a passing out parade or preparations for it?
Yes, there was a passing out parade. I mean, the all the other squads would form up, and then HO 37, my old squad, would then pass out. Well, then your instructor, old Sergeant Woods, he would then be there all dressed up. The adjutant would be there, the commanding officer would be there, and then you, the band would be there, and then you pass out and done all the drills. The arms drill, the squad drills, you've done all the drills. And
was a competition between squads? I mean, a real competition, first, or just natural competition?
No, not really. The only competition would be... all right, Sergeant Woods would say, yeah, look here, they showed you off last week, didn't they? No, there was no serious competition. Not like one I could tell you later on, possibly, when we were in America with the US Marines. Anyway.
Sure you will. We want to hear it. Now, so what happened next? You passed out. This is about July, August, 1940.
Well, then you passed out for duty. You could then call yourself a Royal Marine, and you were then under orders. Now, under orders mean, and I don't mean this jokingly, you can walk around the barracks with a piece of paper under your arm, and no one would ever question you, you know? But you was under orders. The only other thing, you was liable for guard duty. But apart from that, you just...
So you stayed in the barracks?
Stayed in the barracks until you got orders.
Now, when did you get orders?
See, I don't know whether this is going into another story. We got married June the 28th.
Now, had you finished your recruit training then?
Yeah, you've finished now. You are now a fully-fledged Marine.
So you finished in June...
Yeah.
Now, what made you decide to get married? Because there's two ways of doing it. There's deciding to get married, you know, and deciding to wait. Both some people did one. What made you decide to get married?
Well, that's a very, very hard question to answer, really. I mean, first and foremost, the wife wasn't pregnant, which is a lot of reasons people get married for. Secondly, it was just a natural occurrence of the two of us.
But it wasn't specially because you might be sent away and, you know...
No. Obviously, I don't know what her feelings were, but no, it's just that, you see.
It was just the right time. So it was a natural thing for you. And that the war had nothing to do with it, you know.
Not really, no.
So what happened next then, right? You said, sorry, I interrupted.
Well, I said to my Quartermaster Sergeant Watson...
This is at
Chatham.
Yeah.
I went up to old Watson and said, can I have weekend leave, Major? He said, no, you're under orders. I said, yeah, but I'm getting married. Oh, he said, all the more reason why you shouldn't go on leave then. Just like that, jokingly. He said, but I'll tell you one thing, he said, Corporal. He said, I'll tell you one thing.
Now, you weren't a corporal, though, were you?
I was a corporal, yeah. We bypassed where I went down to deal for promotion. But anyway, I can come back to that.
Right. I thought this was June 1940.
Where am I getting my dates mixed up? Oh, you got me guessing now. I went down to Dill.
We haven't done that. You've just come out of recruits. I think you got married in 1941, didn't you?
Yeah, 41.
Right, so let's...
Don't tell the wife I slipped up there.
So what happened after so we go back to the old thing. It was about July or August. You just finished your recruit course. What happened then?
Well, you were just a spare number, to quote the expression. You were just a spare number, and all you done was watchkeeping and guard duty.
Now, what was watchkeeping? Tell us what that was.
Watchkeeping was dogs middle forenoon, afternoon first and morning. They are 4-hour stints. Dogs was 4 o'clock till 8. The first, 8 o'clock till midnight. Morning, 8 o'clock till 6. That's only a 2-hour one.
I thought this was when you were at sea, though. They did this at Chatham as well.
Oh, we still done that. I told you that once you was aboard inside those gates, you was, for all intents and purposes, Royal Navy.
Sorry. Okay.
For discipline and what have you. And the watchkeeping, if you was in the barracks, would be orderlies in the office. Well, anything to occupy your mind, that's all. Nothing serious at all. Because you was awaiting orders.
And what about guard duty? What was that like?
Guard was 2 on, 4 off.
And what was it like?
It was very, very... It was only 12-hour stints, night time. 6 o'clock till the morning. 2 on, 4 off. You then walked around with a rifle, because Bren guns and Tommy guns and Sten guns, they weren't general issue. It's just a case you had a particular beat to do, and that was it, that's all. Nothing had us. No, nothing at all.
So what happened next then? So you're there. How long did this period last before you got your first ship or first posting?
Well, the first draft I had, you can't read that blank, can you? Because I did want to get the parchment out. It would tell you the day I joined the ship, how I got up there. I went up there as a gunnery rating.
Went up where?
When I picked the ship up at Scotland.
That's your first posting?
That was my first posting, was HMS Royal Sovereign.
Now, when was that? You're not sure. Should we look that up later?
If you would. I could be giving dates which don't coincide.
Well, we'll have a look and we'll put them in the catalogue, you know, we'll review them quickly. Yeah. So that's HMS Royal Sovereign. Now, where did you join her?
Where?
Yeah.
Greenock. Scotland.
That's near the Clyde. The Clyde, isn't it?
Yeah. At about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Now, what was your reception on joining the ship? It was your first ship, wasn't it? You'd not been aboard a proper ship before, probably. What was your reception like as you went aboard?
Well, I arrived at Greenock, and there was a Liberty boat waiting at the jetty, and they were waiting for me. I was the only passenger aboard that pinnace. Took me aboard, or took me to the ship. I then went aboard, and there was the corporal of the gangway there. I told him who I was. I gave him my papers. He said, well, we can't do nothing now. He said, Reed, he said, what we'll do, he said, bunk down there and be outside the office in the morning at 8 o'clock. Well, when he told me to bunk down there, he forgot to tell me there was about 60 or other Marines all sleeping down there on the deck in the mix and the hammocks and everything. Anyway, that was it. And then in the morning I went there, reported to the Sergeant Major, Percy Parker, the officer, and they allocated me to a watch. I was port watch, and you will be gun layer on P6. You will be captain of the gun, the right hand gun on the 15-inch X turret.
The captain of the gun as a new recruit?
Yeah. Well, I was a gunnery rating. Oh yeah, I was a QR2, a gunnery rating, which qualified me to be captain of the gun.
But you hadn't done. When had you done that? I'm getting a bit lost here because you'd only done basic training.
You see, you do the training when you're at Chatham. You train with all the elementary parts of a gun. You start off as a QR3. The QR3 is a single gun with a 3 underneath. That's done at Chatham, and that is done on the 6-inch, which has the complete gun there. But when you go down to Whale Island, and the one that's adjacent to Whale Island, you do the 15-inch, which is more advanced, then you qualify as a QR2, which is cross guns with a Q2.
And you'd gone there from Chatham and then gone back to Chatham.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. That fits in right. And so that qualified you to be...
captain of the gun.
Captain of a 6-inch gun.
No, captain of the 15-inch. I was gun layer on the 6-inch because I was a QR3.
Right. So what? So you were a captain of a 15-inch gun.
Yeah.
And what did that entail?
It entailed that I was basically in charge of that right-hand gun because they're twin turrets, as you probably know. I was in charge of that gun.
Now, which gun was it? It was the
right-hand gun. X turret. You had
A, B, X. The Marines are always in X turret.
Yeah. They were the after gun, X and Y.
Now, what was your job in charge of the as captain of the right-hand gun in X turret?
Right.
Summarise it for us.
You've asked. Now, captain of the gun meant that you was responsible that the projectile and the charges came up, and you was responsible that they were put into the breech. Now, I'll have to explain that. Because if you can imagine this with a little bit of imagination, you've got the breech right in front of you and the gun going out that way. Now, immediately behind it, approximately 6 foot, was a little platform, a little metal platform, and you stood there. That was the hoist, and you had a lever here. Now, the hoist was a cage, an iron cage, that went right down to the bows of the ship. And then what you had down there was, the first thing to come up was the projectile from the shell room. So I would send the hoist down. Yeah? A horrible noise that it made. Then when that reached the shell room, the crew in the shell room would then get a projectile weighed about a ton, see, and put it on the hoist, and then they would indicate to me that it is all ready. I would then bring the hoist up. That will come up level with the breech. I then operated the pedal, and from underneath me came the ram. A big ram used to come out, attach itself to the projectile and push it right in. Out. I would then send that down again, and that would go down to the magazine. Now, it would depend what you're firing, a full charge, half charge, or whatever. So, if we say it's a full charge, a charge, you've got cordite about that long.
And how, if 12 inches by. They can't see, remember?
A charge would be approximately, it's a bundle of cordite in a canvas bag. Give or take 15 inches to 20 inches long and about just under 15 inches diameter.
Was it it was canvas cut, quite stiff then, not
Oh, it's stiff. I mean, it's stiffer than this. I mean,
standard canvas stuff.
Yeah, it's the way a calico, anyway. And in the cage, if you're on a full charge, you would have four of these. One, two, three, four. Then, if it's a full charge, I would then ram two in, out, up hoist, ram two in, that's four. Down hoist. Then I would scream out, gun loaded. The chap on the breech would then shut the oven door, as it was known as. The breech would shut. The interceptor worker would knock his switch up. Right hand gun ready. And that's it. You just wait there, and behind us would be the gunnery officer. He would be behind there in the turret. And once again, as I said, the director layer is the man responsible for firing it. The gun layer is doing his bicycle hand wheels, following the turret. I mean, exaggerated, the gun barrel would be going up and down like that. Exaggerated. Well, then, when they get the order, fire, the director layer would be the boy, and then, bang. And then you stand there, and you think, oh my God. The breech is, bear in mind, about 6 feet from you, comes back like that, and stops about that much from you.
About 6 inches from you.
Give or take, about that much. And you stood there and think, thank Christ it's anchored, you know what I mean, with huge springs.
Was it frightening the first time?
Most definitely. I mean, you're standing there and you've got this huge breech block there.
Right
in front of you, and all of a sudden you hear the word ding ding, and you stand by, and it, as I said, it's a woof, and you see this thing exaggerated like that. It comes out like that, but in fact it looks as though it's leaping out and stops about so much from you.
Yeah. What was how bad was the noise? I mean, you made it more a woof than a.
Not bad at all, because don't forget. I mean, the turret itself was about 12 inches thick armour, you know, steel, iron, metal. So it deadened it quite a bit. You've got far worse outside. If you was outside, well then, you lost your eardrums.
The noise came from the end of the barrel, the other end of the barrel end.
Yeah, the front
outside
end.
Outside the turret.
The front end, yeah. And of course then, you see, when it came back and the gun fired, and it went forward again, it automatically opened the breech, and then there was an automatic air blast, and that would clear all the residue out of the barrel. Then you start again, progy, you know.
And how long did it take to you know, in between firing? I mean, you've got the other gun going as well, of course, but to load and fire your gun?
Oh.
Can you guess?
2-3 minutes.
So the guns would be going about every minute and a half then.
Yeah.
The left, because you fired in salvos, didn't you?
It depended how you fired. If you fired in salvos, you see, then the two guns could fire together.
I thought that was a broadside when they fired.
No, a broadside is when the whole gun's fired. The whole lot. That's a broadside. You see? I mean, you can fire independently. Or you can fire salvos. I mean, that could be called a salvo, agreed. But then the broadside is...
All eight.
X, Y, A and B. Oh, yeah.
So the way you could fire one or the other about every minute and a half. It'd take you about 3 to 4 minutes to load.
Yeah, well, I did know what the rate of fire was at one time, but now, I mean...
It's a long time ago.
It's a long while ago. I mean, I can't remember.
And what were other people doing in the turret? You know, how many other crew were there in the 15-inch turret? And what did they do? That's difficult.
Captain of the gun.
And what was his job?
Well, his job is what I just told you. You had the trainer.
Sorry, I do apologize. So you got the trainer.
The trainer, the layer. That's a gun barrel.
Trainer and a layer you've dealt with.
Yeah. But then don't forget, you didn't. You got no manual loaders, because the captain of the gun used to do that with his ram, you see.
So you've done all that with the automated systems.
That's all done. Basically, that is. Oh, then the interceptor worker, then the breach worker.
Well, breach worker just opened it.
A breach worker opened and shut the breach. But if you're referring to a gun turret, so you've got two captains of the guns, haven't you?
Of course, yes.
You've got two interceptor workers, you see. And then right above you, you've got the officer, and he is there.
That's the one I keep mistaking when you say captain of the gun. I'm sorry about that. He's captain of the turret, isn't he?
Yeah.
And what's his role, basically? He's...
Well, to be quite honest, just to be there. See, the captain of the gun has got priority. I mean, he's the one that said the gun is loaded, the gun is not loaded.
So he has just responsibility. And he will intervene if anything's going wrong, I presume, and give instructions.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the officer is up there. I mean, he can supersede. If he sees things are going wrong,